So tonight I'm going to marry a few things. I'm going to speak from the Bhagavad Gita, the verses that we're up to, and I'm going to tie it into trust a bit. And I'm also going to try to do a bit of a case study of different people who we read about, we know about, that imbibe these different qualities and how they play out in the scheme of things, in the greater scheme of things. Let's see if we can pull that together. So the verse on the board is text 24, chapter 18 of the Bhagavad Gita. It's called The Perfection of Renunciation. And in the beginning of this chapter, chapter 18, Krishna is discussing many, many different things according to the modes of material nature. And then ultimately he speaks about what's beyond the material nature, how to surrender completely to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But the first 40-something, 50 verses are dedicated to examining different things according to the modes of material nature. Talking about knowledge, talking about action, talking about the performer of action, the doer, the worker, and other things as the chapter goes on. So even understanding charity, so many different things, all happening, filtered through the three modes of material nature. So the three modes of material nature, they have a huge impact on us. And I'm going to just read through these a few verses here, because these, some of them don't have any purports, and the ones that do have purports, very small purports. But the idea is that these modes of material nature will move us around in ways that, if we intellectually or philosophically discuss them, when we're talking about them, we don't want some of the reactions that the modes of material nature cause. We can identify them as being undesirable. And yet, even though we identify them as being undesirable, we find ourselves subjected to them one way or another. Even though we kind of know it's not really where we want to go, we wind up going there anyway. And so what's that about? Why are the three modes of material nature causing us to... or why are we acting, let's put it this way, why are we acting under the auspices of the three modes of material nature? Because it's not fair to say they're the cause, the karta, the cause, the doer, because we're very much part of that doerness. We have a role to play in the doerness. And of course the three modes of material nature, they're also part of the doerness. They are the ones who the three modes of material nature, or prakriti in general, facilitates things to happen in the material world. She has all the ingredients to make things happen. And then, of course, there's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's the sanctioner. He's the one who, the overseer and the permitter, that allows things to happen. But we are very much the doer, in the sense of we push the button, we're the desirer. And based on our desire, we cause things to happen. So you can say, for instance, if I stab you with a knife, then the knife is the thing that stabbed you. But if I go to court and I say, well, I didn't do it, the knife did it, that's not going to go over very well. Because there's somebody behind the knife that's making the thing happen. And even behind that body that's moving the knife with the hand, there's a consciousness that's allowing these events to occur. And sometimes we see that things happen very suddenly and almost without our... we don't willingly, we don't think it's what we want to do. If someone asked us in a moment of dispassion, what is it that you want to do? We could come up with a whole bunch of very laudable, very auspicious list of things that we want to do. But somehow or other, we don't get it done. And we get waylaid along the way. And we'll talk about somebody who we can really see was subjected to that kind of mentality. So starting with text 24, which is the one on the board, and it has no purport, it's Yat tu kame kanepsuna karma sankarena va puna kriyate bahula yasam tad rajasam udharatim. Action, but action performed. So the first one, 23, we really should start with 23. I'll read the English. The action which is regulated and which is performed without attachment, without love or hatred, and without desire for fruit of result is said to be in the mode of goodness. So what we do is influenced by the modes of nature, and when it's influenced by the mode of goodness, when we're functioning in the mode of goodness, we're not pushed or pulled by love or hatred. We don't have any desire for fruit of result, and we're not attached. So a person who's in this mode of material nature is very trustworthy. This mode of nature, mode of goodness, lets us be very trustworthy because we're not motivated by our own desire. And we're not motivated by you're my friend or you're my enemy. What am I motivated by? Prabhupada, in the purport, he says we're motivated by Krishna consciousness. But, of course, that's what we call sometimes the Prabhupada elevator, that he takes everything to the top floor. But it's motivated by a desire, and in the least, it's motivated by a desire to see the welfare of everybody. It's motivated by a desire to see the best outcome according to the Shastra, according to Guru, according to higher intelligence. What should be done, and what will have the best long-term outcome? That's action, going to be the action of someone who's in the mode of goodness. He'll take that action. And we see that very much in Vidura. Vidura was a person who, although he is a hero in many, many ways, and he's a famous hero in the Mahabharata, still we don't hear about him so much. We hear about Arjuna and all the different people mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam, and Vidura is one of the conversationalists in the Bhagavatam too. He's one of the six top people who have conversation in the Srimad Bhagavatam. But Vidura is a brilliant person. He's actually very much in the mode of goodness and driven by a desire to see welfare for everybody, including what someone might consider to be his enemy, or including what someone might consider to be his relative, or someone might consider to be his friend. He was neutral to all those people, and he moved silently, without attempting to get any kind of aggrandizement, without attempting to become rich or famous or any of those things. He wasn't attached to any of those things. But almost behind the scenes, in some cases actually behind the scenes, he moved to make things right. Other people were moving to make things wrong. And we'll discuss them in a minute. But Vidura was acting to make things right. So someone made an arrangement, for example, that the Pandavas would be killed in a rather despicable way. I mean, they were warriors, and warriors plotted that, well, you know, we could knock them off, we could get rid of them in a way that no one will know that we got rid of them. And so we'll arrange for them to go on an outing. We'll invite them to a place of like a picnic or a vacation spot. And we'll create that vacation spot in such a way that it's so beautiful and so pleasant and so enjoyable that that they won't suspect that actually this is going to be the place where they're going to get killed. This is the place they're going to... So what kind of mentality is that, right? How low class is that mentality? That somebody has an ulterior motive and they're willing to kill not only the five Pandavas, but Kunti as well. They were willing to kill Kunti, Mother Kunti, and they were willing to kill her five sons. They didn't have any problem with that. And they had so much not a problem with it that they were willing to do it in a sneaky way so that they thought they could get away with it. And They would walk away clean. No one would hate them for killing the Pandavas because the Pandavas were pretty loved. What to speak of Kunti? She was a queen. She was a very respectful woman, respectable woman. And they arranged this house in Varnavat, which was made out of flammable substances. I was hearing today, I had a call with Pragosh Prabhu, and he was telling me that there was this big fire in London, and it was a big scandal because the fire was in a very wealthy part of London. However, it was on a block within that wealthy area where there weren't wealthy people. And so the house wasn't maintained properly because the people were living in it were on welfare and they weren't really, didn't have much money. And not only that, but when they did call in, the fire started, the fire department didn't come that quickly. And an interesting note is that one of the fire people that entered the house was a devotee. Yeah, it was a devotee, was a fireman by profession. And he said it was one of the worst fires he ever saw in his life. It got to 1,000 degrees centigrade in that house when the fire, because it was made of old materials, they were highly flammable, and about 100 people were killed in that fire. So this is what these people, Dhritarashtra, Duryodhana, especially Duryodhana, Shakuni, this is what they planned to do. They planned it and they built that house with that intention. They made it very beautiful. They sent the Pandavas there. So the Pandavas were in that house, and Vidura, because he was in the mode of goodness, he didn't want to upset the Kauravas. He didn't want to get him in trouble. He didn't go on Facebook and say, hey, you know what's going on? These guys are going to try to kill the Pandavas. No, what he did was he snuck out, and he didn't even do it. He sent somebody to send them a message. First message was, be careful. There's something going to be happening here. And it was said in another language, in a village, like a Aborigines language. And it was a cryptic message. It said, like mice, they eat through things and get out in holes. So in the same way, this place is kind of dangerous, whatever. I don't remember the exact message. But Yudhisthira got it. He figured it out. And because it was coming from Vidura, who was so trustworthy, he was so trustworthy because everybody knew that he had the welfare of everybody at hand. Even Dhritarashtra would ask him for advice. And even Dhritarashtra, when he lost his temper and sent Vidura away, he lamented afterwards. He was very sorry that he did that. So because Vidura was so trusted, he was such a person of integrity. And he was a pure devotee of Krishna, but besides the fact that he was a pure devotee of Krishna, he was living with the enemy, with Duryodhana, Dhritarashtra, and he was an advisor to the king, a trusted minister. So imagine how that must have felt, giving Dhritarashtra all this very good advice and not having any of it listened to ever. He was always telling him what to do right, but Dhritarashtra was in the next category. He was motivated totally by selfish interest. He couldn't hear anything, what to speak of Duryodhana, who was motivated by a negative interest. So you have Vidura motivated by the mode of goodness, who doesn't see friends and enemies, only sees the ultimate good. And so he went there, and he sent the message, and Yudhisthira and the Pandavas started exploring outside and seeing. They went for walks in the forest to figure out how to get out. And then finally someone came and said, you know, I'm here to dig a tunnel. Your Vidura sent me. And he dug a tunnel. And the Pandavas escaped without harm. Six people died. Five men and one woman died in that fire. But they were Duryodhana's men and and women. And they were drunk. And they fell asleep just at the wrong time. So the Pandavas managed to escape. And because they found these bodies in the house, they were unrecognizable. Everybody assumed that the Pandavas were no longer. And actually, Vidura kept that secret. He didn't let anyone know. And the Pandavas stayed in exile or in hiding for 1 year. So, but here is a person who was totally in the mode of goodness, Vidura. He was able to give good advice to Dhritarashtra, who was overcome with total passion. And he was able to tolerate Duryodhana. He even tried to give good advice to Duryodhana. In the gambling match, in the match where Draupadi was disrobed in the assembly, Vidura was the only one who was able to, well, not the only one, there was one other, but Vidura was a spokesperson amongst the seniors. He was the only one that could speak up, or that did speak up, because he knew it wasn't for the welfare. It wasn't for the welfare of the kingdom. It wasn't for the welfare. He didn't try to get Dhritarashtra out of the kingdom. He just tried to get him to see things properly. And he worked quietly, silently, so that he could do what he had to do. He didn't want any recognition. He didn't want any, yay, Vidura, you did it, congratulations. Actually, Grandfather Bhishma was furious with him. But he did that. And then at the very end, because Vidura was kicked out of the kingdom by Dhritarashtra in a fit of anger, Vidura saw that as Krishna's arrangement, because he didn't want to have to fight in the Battle of Kurukshetra. And so he was able to go on pilgrimage during the battle. He didn't participate, because he didn't want to be on either side. He sympathized with the situation. He knew that whatever side he took, it would be he wouldn't be able to do the best for everybody, so he just thought, let me go on pilgrimage. And then what did he do? At the end, he talked to Maitreya. He was a pure devotee in every way. He had loving relationships with Krishna. Krishna ate at his house. Krishna ate banana peels at his house, because he and his wife were so absorbed in Krishna that they were peeling the banana and looking at Krishna's face, and they just offered Krishna the banana peel. And Krishna ate it, because it was offered with love and devotion. Not that we should offer banana peels, but he was able, because he was offering with so much love and devotion, and Krishna accepted those banana peels, just like he accepted the bitten fruits of Sabari Muni when she ate the fruits first and then gave them to Lord Ram. And then what after that, with all that intimate relationship with Krishna and Krishna's devotees and helping in so many ways and going on pilgrimage and talking to Maitreya and finding out the highest truth and all these things, the battle was over, everything's done. What does he do? He comes back with the determination that this brother of mine, who is acted like a complete moron against my directions, repeatedly pushed by the motive, passion, attachment to his family, couldn't listen to anything I said, caused a war that destroyed practically a kingdom and killed so many people unnecessarily. I'm going to go back and I'm going to try to save him. Now, how's that for the motive goodness? There's a person who you want to watch your back, right? That, you know, you can count on him no matter what. Even if you blow it, he'll be there for you. He'll try as much as he possibly can to assist you to do the highest right thing. That's Vidura. So Vidura came back to Dhritarashtra, and, you know, here's Dhritarashtra living happily in the house of Yudhisthira. Yudhisthira's king now. He's still in the palace pretending that everything's fine. And, you know, Yudhisthira is worshiping him every morning, going to him, offering obeisances, taking care of him and everything. And Vidura comes in, and, you know, everybody's so happy to see Vidura, but Vidura goes to Dhritarashtra and says, "You are a fool, and you're living like a dog. In the house of someone you tried to kill, you're living off their scraps like a dog who sits under the table, and when you don't like something, you throw it." Not that Yudhisthira was thinking like that, but Dhritarashtra was living off the Pandavas who had tried to kill. He, in so many ways, he had permitted, both by sanctioning and by effort. He tried to humiliate them. He tried to kill them. So many things. And now Vidura is coming back to save him, and he knows the only way he's going to do it is by blasting him, so he blasts him. Tell him, get out of here. And not only get out of here, but get out of here in the middle of the night. Because you're so low class and so attached that if you try to leave in the day, you'll see Yudhisthira and the Pandavas, and they'll beg you to stay, and you'll think, oh, yes, I should stay. They want me to stay, so I should stay. And, you know, because you get out in the middle of the night, so no one will see you, and no one will try to stop you. Just get lost. Go to the forest and perfect your life. Will you finally? You've lost everything now. You've ruined everything now. Get it together. So we would think, well, someone came and yelled at me like that, they weren't really my friend. But Vidura was the best friend that Dhritarashtra could have had. And finally, at the fag end of his life, he actually got him to head in the right direction, to make a move that was worth making. And the only one he made in his life, practically. So this is a person in the mode of goodness, so worthy of trust, so capable, so competent, so caring, so honest, so open, so willing to act in the right way, even if it's uncomfortable, so willing to adjust things so that they can be the best for everybody, not necessarily the best for him. This is Vidura, Mahatma Vidura. Such a great person. So then we go to the next description here. That action which is performed in illusion, in disregard of scriptural injunction, and without, well, there's one before that, sorry. Action performed with great effort by one seeking to gratify his desires and enacted for the sense of false ego is called action in the mode of passion. And there you have Dhritarashtra. Dhritarashtra unable to do the right thing, even though when he heard the right thing, just think about his association. He was associating constantly with two Mahajans, Vidura, actually, anyway, at least Vidura and Bhishma, both of whom are Mahajans. And he was hearing from them regularly. They were giving him good advice that went in one ear and right out the other. Sometimes it would go in and he'd agree and he'd say, yes, I agree, but I can't do it because I'm too attached. I'm too attached to my family, I'm too attached to this crown, I'm too attached to the kingdom, I'm too attached to being number one. And so I have no ability. He kept saying that again and again. I have no ability. I can't control my mind. I can't control my senses. And, you know, I have to do what I have to do. I have to make sure that my son gets the crown. And so even though Vidura was working on him, he couldn't understand anything. His actions were so much motivated by false ego and material desire that he was unable to think clearly. So this person, he's not very trustworthy. And this is why we hear that in the prayers that we've been reading recently that you can't trust people in material life. They have no good qualities. Sometimes we hear that and we're like, yeah, what does that mean? I so know so many nice people. The guy at the supermarket, he's so nice to me. He always says, how are you? Good morning. Govardhan. You know, he's like a cool guy. And you're telling me that nobody in the material world has any good qualities. Well, this is why. Because they're subject to change without notice. If you're part of their plan, then fine, they'll work with you. But if you become an obstacle in their plan, they'll take you out. You know, they'll remove you one way or another. Because they're thinking that I have to succeed. My victory, my power, my money, my false ego is what needs to be protected at all costs. So this person is not trustworthy. And you can say he has no good qualities because those qualities are not, they're not steady. They're there today, gone tomorrow. Vidura proved that over the whole course of events, he never, never once succumbed to the lower modes of material nature. He remained fixed in action in the mode of goodness. And even if it was painful for him, difficult for him, still he would do the right thing, even if it didn't feel good. On the contrary, Dhritarashtra, he did the right thing when it felt good, and he tried to make the right thing feel as little bad for the other party as he could get away with and still get the right thing that he wanted done. So, you know, he sent them to Indraprastha. Indraprastha had nothing. But by Krishna's grace and a little help from his friends, Yudhisthira built it into a huge, beautiful city. But Dhritarashtra was trying to play both sides, right? Make his son happy and make the Pandavas happy, or let at least appear that he was trying to make both sides. So this is the mode of passion, that I care mostly about myself, all about myself. It's all about me, me winning, me getting money, me getting prestige, me being in power. And if it works for you too, great. But if it doesn't work for you, no problem. I'll just get rid of you. So this person is not reliable. This person is not to be trusted. This person is not... What do you need to know? Can I help you? Did I say something wrong? Or you didn't understand some word I used? No? I didn't hear?
He said to me that maybe it's too loud, but
that's it. Oh, it maybe. Actually, someone wrote me this morning that was listening to my class in London, and they said that there was a lot of feedback, you know, in the sound. I couldn't hear it in here, but he said, I never heard you sound so squeaky. So maybe it's still going on. I don't know. Sorry. Anyway, so this is action performed in the mode of passion. And then we have action performed in the mode of ignorance. And you can see, if you look at Dhritarashtra, that if you look at Duryodhana, you go a notch down. Right? A notch down from Dhritarashtra. Because he was cutthroat, and so was Sukuni. They were cutthroat. They didn't care right or wrong. They couldn't even tell right from wrong. Right to them was, we win. Wrong was, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter what's wrong, right? What's wrong? Wrong is judged by what I think is right. And what I think is right, and what I think is wrong, I don't think anything's wrong. The only thing that's wrong is if it gets in the way of my life. That's what's wrong. So don't worry about if I have to murder everybody, sneak around, do it against the codes of religion, if I have to make people as miserable as I can, right? Duryodhana, he had a party when, after the Pandavas were exiled, he sent them into the forest, and they were living there for 14 years. So what he did was he set up a camp right next to theirs, very close to theirs, because they were not living as kings. Yudhisthira wouldn't allow them to have any, amenities of kingness, because they were supposed to be mendicants in the forest. And so he took that very seriously, and they lived very austerely. They lived in cottages that were put together on site as needed. And fortunately, Draupadi had this pot that would make enough food for them to eat until she took her meal. And so they didn't have any problem eating. But they lived very simply. And Duryodhan, he wanted to rub it in. He wanted to make them miserable-er, if it was possible, more miserable. So he set up a camp right next to them, and he had a big party, and he had dancing girls and liquor and music and all kinds of stuff, and of course he didn't send them an invitation. But he assumed that they would hear and that they would become envious, which they didn't, and that they would become an anxiety. And then what he did was he thought, because his thought process was, everything is there for my enjoyment. There's no need to follow any rules, or I just take whatever I want. So he took a woman, an Aborigines woman, a woman from the forest, and she got away, and then her relatives came, and they crashed the party. They crashed the party, and they captured Duryodhana. And Karna was so drunk that he couldn't do anything about it, so he ran away, and he went to the Pandavas, and he told the Pandavas, these guys, they've captured Duryodhana. You got to do something about it. So what did the Pandavas do? Because again, Yudhisthira was totally in the mode of goodness, totally unattached, totally not motivated by personal desire. He said to Bhima and Arjuna, you got to go over there and save Duryodhana. And they said, what? Why should we save Duryodhana? Let him kill him. What do we got to go save him? No, you have to go save him because he's our relative. You know, we have to do the right thing. So they went over, and by argument, they convinced these men, because these men were actually friends of Yudhisthira. They convinced him, listen, who has more right to kill this guy, you or us? And they said, okay, you do. So they left him. But what happened to Duryodhana is because he wasn't grateful. He wasn't thinking, oh, thanks a lot, Yudhisthira, I really appreciate it. Maybe you should just keep Indraprastha and we'll call it quits. We'll have friends. Nope. He was thinking, oh, my God, I should kill myself. Yudhisthira saved me. How embarrassing. How humiliating. That Karna, how could you do that? How could you call our enemy and have me be humiliated so much by coming here and them saving me? Now I'm going to kill myself. I'm just going to kill myself. So that's a whole other story, what happened there. But just see the influence of the modes of material nature and how the modes of material nature change our trustability. Now, Prabhupada expressed to us over and over again that we need to stay in the mode of goodness. And it's not easy to stay in the mode of goodness. It's not easy to stay in the mode of goodness. Mode of passion is very attractive, it's very strong, especially in this society, in this Kali Yuga. The mode of passion is crazy. It's available everywhere, and not only is it available, but it's considered desirable. If you don't pursue the mode of passion, you're a loser. Right? If you're not interested in making money, if you're not interested in being sexy and beautiful and having lots of exchanges that will give you a lot of sense gratification, you're considered to be a loser. You're low class. Look at you people living like this. You have no furniture, no TV, no money. What's worth of your life? Get a job. Get your act together. So the mode of passion is advertised as being the best, the best, the best. That's what you should go for. Move fast, faster. And children are trained that way from birth. They're trained that way. Even Bhaktivinoda Thakur sang in one of his Sharanagati songs that I was born, and from the minute I was born, my family was telling me, oh, you're going to be a success, you're so cute, you're so beautiful, and I was drinking it up and thinking, yes, you're right, and I got an education, I became wealthy, and I became famous, and in the end, I wasted my whole life. Of course, Bhaktivinoda Thakur didn't waste his life, but in his humility, he's saying that this is the mode of passion is so predominant, that action in the mode of passion is considered a good thing. And Prabhupada spoke about how when he went to Dai Nippon in Japan to get our books printed originally, and he sat at a table, oh, Back to Godhead, I believe it was, and he sat at a table with a whole bunch of executives. And at that time, it was a very popular thing that everybody had their business cards, you know, and then it was a prestigious thing to be able to give your business card to as many people as possible. People collected business cards, you know, and had a nice business card to give to everybody else. So when everybody left the table, there were business cards at each of the seats that of the people who had been sitting there, and some young man was picking them all up. And Prabhupada said to that young man, he said, what is the goal of your life? What are you trying to do with your life? And the boy took his business card and he put it on the top of all the other business cards. That was the goal of his life, to have his business card on the top of all these other guys. So, and that's laudable, right? His parents were proud of him. Right? That's what his parents wanted him to do. His parents thought, yeah, good for you. You'll make it someday to be the top. You'll be number one, not even number two, not even two and a half. You'll be number one because we don't settle for two and a half. So this is the mode of passion and the mode of ignorance. I was just reading just before I came down here that there's a crisis amongst millions of crises. There's one crisis happening in America right now that people are overdosing on opiates or opioids or some, what is it? Opioids, yeah. The, both prescription and non-prescription drugs that kill pain. And they're taking so much of it that they're dying. They're being hospitalized for it. They're dying for it. And they don't, they're destroying their lives, and the rates have gone up like exponentially, 99% in the last 4 years. 99% the rate has gone up of near-death experiences from these drugs. And why is that? Because the pain of material existence, even though you're working like an ass and you're trying to be number one, you're miserable. And you can't face the reality. The reality is too tough, too hard to face. It's just, it's horrible. Right? It's horrible. So without, it's described here, without any concern for the future, without any care about how else you're going to cause suffering, without even concern for the health of your body, just zone out. Just zone out. Somehow or other, get me out of here. Maybe I'm physically here, but I'm not going to be mentally here. I'm going to be gone. I'm going to be intoxicated, and I'm going to just leave, or I'll sleep all day. But I'm gonna get out of this situation. And so we have that mode of ignorance is so prevalent in our society. And it causes us to think what is right is wrong, and what is wrong is right. Mix them up. Confuse them. Do the wrong thing as if it was the right thing, and do the right thing as if it was the wrong thing. That's the description of the mode of ignorance. And so these modes of material nature, they work on us, and we have to be very aware of them. We sometimes wonder how the Bhagavad Gita in the middle six chapters talks about the highest knowledge, and then regresses, so to speak, to talk about the three modes of material nature. And why is that? Why does Krishna give us a glimpse at himself, give us the highest knowledge, the most transcendental knowledge, and then regress to a lower level of knowledge, the modes of material nature, which is not, doesn't seem like it should come after you get to know Krishna, right? Once you know Krishna, you shouldn't have to worry about the three modes of material nature anymore. But somehow Krishna gives us this knowledge in another order. And the reason for that is because if I take you and I say to you, I have this treasure, millions of dollars or millions of euro, and it's you can have it. It's yours. The only thing is, it's locked in this room and I have the key. And I'm not going to give it to you. So then what becomes more important, the key or the money? You think the money, at first you think millions of euro, that's the most important thing. But when I have the key and you can't get in the room, then the key becomes the most important thing. That's not worth a dime. Right? That's just a little teeny silly thing. It's not worth much at all. But if you don't have it, you can't get the money. So then it becomes very valuable. So we know that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and we want to have a relationship with him. But at the same time, it's locked up in the modes of material nature, the three modes of material nature, especially passion and ignorance. And unless we have the key to open that up, to get out of passion and ignorance, and even ultimately goodness, material goodness, we can't get that treasure. We will not be able to see Krishna, even if he's standing right in front of us. We won't be able to see him. He was actually standing right in front of Dhritarashtra. Dhritarashtra couldn't see him. Dhritarashtra heard the Bhagavad Gita from Sanjaya. Sanjaya was speaking the same Bhagavad Gita that Krishna was speaking to Arjuna. Sanjaya heard it. And at the end of the Bhagavad Gita, Sanjaya had an amazing reaction. His hair was standing on end. He was in ecstasy. He was totally overwhelmed by what he had just experienced and what he heard. Dhritarashtra heard the same Bhagavad Gita. He had a totally different reaction. He was angry because he was thinking at the beginning, oh good, Arjuna is not going to fight. He's going to put down the Gandiva, and the whole everyone's going to go away. They'll go back to the forest, and my son will become king. Whoopee! And I won't have to take responsibility for causing this Kurukshetra battle. It's perfect. And then Krishna got involved, and he went and blew the whole thing. He spoke the Bhagavad Gita, and at the end, Arjuna said, Karishye vachanam tava. Now I will do as you say, and I'll fight. And Arjuna and Dhritarashtra was angry. Why did Krishna have to interfere? It's all his fault. If he would have just minded his own business and be quiet, then the whole thing would have been just fine. And he couldn't do it, big guy that he is. He has to get involved. And then he changed Arjuna's mind, and now this whole war is going to happen. It's all Krishna's fault. So two people heard Bhagavad Gita, spoken by the Supreme Lord. And look at the difference in the reaction. One, because too much influenced by the mode of passion. And one, in the mode of goodness. And that person in the mode of goodness didn't have a position. He was living in a, you know, serving, very dutifully serving, not very elevated person, spiritually speaking. He was very dutifully serving. He was trying very hard to do the right thing. But when he heard Bhagavad Gita, he was in ecstasy. And when Dhritarashtra heard Bhagavad Gita, he was in agony. So look at the difference. That just a little mode of nature, a little influence of that mode of nature can make. And it's so important for us to get out of the effect of the mode of passion and the mode of ignorance. To break the bonds of the qualities of the modes of ignorance and passion. And in order to do that, we have to make decisions in our lives. Because we decide things, that we do things. We're the doer, karta. We make decisions that show Krishna what we want. If I say to you, how many people here want to go back to Godhead in this life? Please raise your hand. Okay, so everybody's hands up. We all want to go back to Godhead. But when the mode of passion comes knocking on the door and says, how many of you want to fill in the blank, because you all have your own little attachment, then your hand will go up then too. So by our choices, by the choices we make, we show Krishna what mode of nature we want to be in. We can tell him anything, but we show him by what we do consistently over time. Dhritarashtra could put on an act periodically. He was very nice. He tried to act as a benevolent king. But underneath it all, he was too attached to make intelligent decisions. Too attached. He couldn't make intelligent decisions. So we have to work. We have to work. We have to watch what we eat, who we associate with, what we read, what we put into our brain. What sangskaras we cut into our chitta. We have to watch those things that will bring the modes into our lives, so that we only bring the mode of goodness into our life and we keep the mode of passion and ignorance out of our life. Otherwise, our consciousness, our knowledge, our action will all be tainted by these modes of nature. And the more they're tainted by the modes of nature, the less ability we will have to make good decisions and to become trustworthy. Our ability to be trusted will be impacted. Just like we could see, Vidura was so trustworthy. Even Dhritarashtra, who was acting like an idiot, he could trust Vidura. And also the Pandavas, they trusted Vidura. And Prabhupada, in that song to the six Goswamis, it's explained that the six Goswamis, to the ruffians and the pious people, they were seen as friends, right? They were loved by both, the ruffians and the pious people, because they were so trustworthy. They were so trustworthy. They were so above the modes of passion and ignorance that they could be trusted to do the right thing in any circumstance. We have to become like that. And then we'll be able to attain self-realization. And we'll not only that, but we'll also inspire other people to take up Krishna consciousness, because they're not used to seeing people like that. They're not used to seeing people who are in the mode of goodness. They don't even hardly recognize it as a valuable quality. If you look up humility, and you try to see what it means, you won't see very positive images. The images are all very negative. People getting their heads stepped on, doormats, and you know, people who are humble, ah, boo, humble. You got to be aggressive. You got to be. So we live in a society which has upside down values, but we have the proper values given to us by Krishna and Bhagavad Gita, given to us by Prabhupada and his example, given to us by the Acharyas, and we need to strive for that. We have to work at it. Yes. I see the question coming. Yes. Well, certainly we should protect dignity. What Vidura was trying to do was shake Dhritarashtra up, because Dhritarashtra was so complacent and so comfortable that he wasn't really thinking very much. So Vidura was trying to make him think. That's not all he said. He said a lot of things. He said transcendental things as well. So it wasn't that he was just appealing to his dignity, but rather he was trying to make him aware. Look at what you're doing. You can't stay asleep like this anymore. He said to him, your body is stopping to work. You're getting old. You can't see anymore. You're going deaf. You're coughing up mucus. You're about to die, man. Will you get it together? So his attempt was to push Dhritarashtra to see the emergency, the nature of the emergency, that he didn't have time to play games anymore. He had to do the right thing. That was his thing. But a good preacher will use whatever thread of good thing is there in a person in order to encourage them to take up Krishna consciousness. Just like a book distributor might say, if you do good for somebody else, you'll get something good will come back on you. So people think, okay, yeah, that's true. You know, even in the Bible it says that if you do something good for others, it'll come back on you. So I'll do something good for others. I'll give a donation. And then because we use that donation or we give that donation to Krishna or they get a book or they get prasadam, they make spiritual advancement. So their tendency, their inclination to do something good, maybe not the highest good, but something good, the preacher will use that and bring them a little bit closer to Krishna, a little bit closer to the transcendental platform. And that's the expertise of a preacher. Prabhupada brought people closer to goodness who were so buried in the mode of ignorance that it was pretty scary how deeply they were buried. But somehow he nudged them and he brought them. I tell you that the thing that our parents, my parents, the generation of my family, my parents, that generation, our parents thought was our worst quality was because we had no passion for material wealth. We didn't want to work 9 to 5. For us, that was like worse than death. And so we didn't want to work 9 to 5 in an office. We didn't care about washing machines or cars. Nothing was worth it to us to work like that and make money. We just didn't see the value of the American dream. So we rejected that whole thing. And our parents were pulling their hair out that how you can do that? We came from other countries. We migrated to America. We fought for this country. And now you're rejecting the American dream. You just want to, you know, peace and love. What's going on? But Prabhupada saw that as our number one qualification. that we didn't want material things, that we could see that material things weren't going to give us the happiness that we were looking for. We were looking for a different kind of happiness. We didn't know where to find it, and we were looking in the wrong place. And so we were living in a very degraded life. But Prabhupada pulled out that one thread. That one thread, they're materially exhausted. And he ran a truck through it. He made a whole outfit out of that one thread. He created a whole strategy for preaching Krishna consciousness for us that allowed us to advance from the mode of ignorance, deep mode of ignorance, to the mode of goodness because of that one thing that Prabhupada saw in us. And he was able to help us because of it. So he saw that as our qualification, that we didn't want material life. We wanted another kind of happiness that couldn't be bought for money. And Prabhupada saw that in us, and he thought that was a very valuable quality. And he taught us how to find that happiness and where to find it. Hare Krishna. Anybody else? Yes. Question from the internet. Oh my goodness. Okay, how to cut off attachments as quickly as possible, but
japa doesn't help. This is experience.
My experience is, this person's experience is japa doesn't help. So don't tell me to chant japa, in other words. Right, give me something else. Eat sweet balls. I need another formula. Give me burfi, not the japa. Well, first of all, it's not an isolated thing, chanting japa. There's a process. Prabhupada gave us a process, and the process will help. But the process has many facets. One facet is getting knowledge, studying the Bhagavad Gita, studying the Srimad Bhagavatam, discussing these topics deeply in the association of devotees so that we understand them deeply, not just, you know, memorizing this or that or whatever, but really working to understand these things and apply them in our life. So that's part of the process. Another part of the process is prayer, worshiping the deity, and developing a loving relationship with the deity, because Prabhupada told us we can't be desireless. So unless we get a higher taste, Vishaya Vinivartante, we're not going to get a higher taste unless we develop and we're not going to be able to give up a lower taste, excuse me, unless we develop a higher taste. So we have to find relationships with Krishna, find relationships with his devotees that will satisfy our needs and will replace that attachment, which we're now seeing for what it is. Even though we're still attached to it, we see it more for what it is. Many people have attachments in the material world, and they know that they're not good for them. They join groups like Alcoholics Anonymous, Smokers Anonymous, Overeaters Anonymous. Why do they join those groups? Because they're powerless to overcome their addiction, but they know that their addiction is harming them. So they get together with people who can help each other, who all have the same weakness, but they help each other. So we have Material World Anonymous. We need to get out of the material world, and we need the association of devotees to help us do that. So chanting Hare Krishna, taking prasadam, associating with devotees, reading the scripture, and chanting japa, chanting kirtan, chanting the holy name in a mood of a beggar. The other day we were talking about Bhakti Tirtha Swami. This was one of his things, to chant in the mood of being a beggar. That I'm coming to you, I have no attraction for the holy name, I have so many material attachments, but I'm begging you to help me. Because if you don't help me, then I don't know, I can't do it. I can't do it by myself. So that attitude of being a beggar, of crying like a child for its mother, that's how you have to chant japa, not schnick schnick, ram ram, hari hari, you know, finished my rounds. So we tend to You know, we have mechanical ways to improve our japa, but the real thing that improves our japa is when we feel desperate. The more desperate we feel, the better we chant. Try, you know, see yourself getting into a car accident. See how well you chant Hare Krishna as you go at car out of control, you know. So this is a process. And we have to take up the process. We have to be determined to take up the process. We have to have faith in the process. We have to trust Srila Prabhupada and that he's giving us what's best for us. Maybe sometimes it's a little hard, but I have to do it anyway. I don't know what they think of that, but that's my answer. Yes?
To be completely detached means to be completely detached.
It means to be completely attached to Krishna. That's what it means. Because we can't be completely detached. It's not possible. We have to be completely attached to Krishna, and then material attachment goes away. So sometimes we embrace austerity. This came up in our disciples course, that we embrace austerity and think that austerity is going to give us some kind of spiritual realization. But actually, Rupa Goswami in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu says that too much renunciation makes the hard heart. Hard. Thank you. So say that 10 times fast. So it makes the heart hard because renunciation doesn't give us mercy. Love of God gives us mercy. So we need to develop love of God, and then the other thing will come. And austerity will be something that we take in order to develop love of God. We don't take austerity for austerity's sake. We're not into self-flagellation to cause ourselves pain so that we don't become attached to the body so we whip it. We'll become detached from the body when we understand our relationship with Krishna and that this body is a prison we're trapped in. We want to get out so we can go back to Godhead. But that's my desire. My desire is to go back to Godhead. Everything else comes automatically. Hare Krishna. Okay, I'll stop there. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.